20. A stroll at Full Fathom 5. Colette had breakfast in her cabin, delivered by a female comrade. The Icarians were often hard to tell apart, given their uniforms, but this one she'd nicknamed Big Chin. She was as mute as all the rest of them, and so dull and stolid that Colette was certain she was part ox. Colette ate two slices of seaweed bread, all the while thinking, "My heart, my soul for a croissant." She longed for eggs from a chicken, not a turtle. And lamb, too. After 21 days of fish-based meals, she would have killed for lamb chops. She had spent much of the night trying to figure out who Modo was. She believed him when he said he was an English agent. She had placed his accent as London upper class, but couldn't get any more specific than that. She'd had her suspicions upon first meeting him, and they had been confirmed by his behaviour at the dinner table. And it was especially obvious that he had only a rudimentary knowledge of photography. She wondered if he was younger than he appeared to be. The rash confused her, though. Was he faking that? For what purpose? As an agent, it wasn't a good tactic to draw attention to yourself. And that mask certainly drew attention. As she swallowed the last mouthful of bread, someone knocked on her door. She opened it to find Serdar. "Captain Monturiol thought you should come early to the lock chamber. It will take some time to dress, and it is best to be suited up while no men are present."
"Ah, how modest of Monturiol," Colette said wryly.
Serdar led her down the corridor. He was so large that both his shoulders nearly brushed the walls. Anselm Serdar was a hard one to peg. Despite the fact that none of the Icarians wore any insignia, he seemed to be Monturiol's second in command. Colette had gathered bits and pieces of information. He was an engineer, and had brought this ship to life using Monturiol's father's schematics. He spoke Catalan, French, Spanish, and English fluently, and he had no sense of humour. At least, Serdar never responded to any of Colette's quips. He answered all questions in a matter-of-fact way, and was, it seemed, emotionless. The perfect Icarian. They descended the spiral staircase through the bridge. Colette stole a glance at the pressure gauge. It was at 10 atmospheres, so they were 100 meters below sea level. Her father had taught her marine science, so she knew each atmosphere of pressure was equivalent to 10.6 meters of water pressing down on the gauge. They went through the library, and, for the first time, Colette was allowed into the lower hall leading to the aft of the ship. She kept her eyes wide open, counted her footsteps. From this, she calculated the overall length of the Ictinio to be at least 50 meters. There were more cabins on either side of her, and new clusters of gauges. The journey didn't feel particularly ominous, but her heart skipped a beat when she allowed the idea of an execution to invade her thoughts. "Is it sunny out today?" she asked, to distract herself. Serdar glanced down at her. "We do not experience the ravages of the sun in Icaria."
"It was a joke."
Serdar's footsteps echoed on the hardwood. "Oh, I see. Yes, that is humorous." He led her through another portal. Each section was designed so that it could be tightly closed if the ship took on water. They entered a larger room, oval in shape. Various kinds of machinery and what looked like harvesting instruments lined one wall. And there was the captain, along with a female Icarian who was helping the captain get into a strange metal suit.
"Ah, Mademoiselle Brunette," Captain Monturiol said. "Good morning."
She sounded pleasant enough, but Colette would not give her the benefit of a smile.
"Comrade Girona and I will help you into your aqua suit."
The two women removed a suit from hooks and shelves along the wall. Then the captain stopped to study Colette's face.
"You have a mind like an oyster. Did you know that?"
"What do you mean?"
Colette replied.
"It is closed. But I know there are pearls inside. I eagerly await the opening of your mind today."
"I'm sure you do," Colette said.
Serdar had left the room. Girona handed Colette a rubber suit, which she could only get into by stripping down to her chemise and pantaloons. It fit like a second skin, and she wished she had a mirror.
"Well, this is très fashionable," she declared,
barely containing her contempt.
"We are only concerned with practical fashion in Icaria.
Monturiol said. "But I am pleased with the design. And now your armour."
Girona and the captain picked up a large copper collar and breastplate, which they lowered over Colette and fastened around her. It was followed by a series of narrow metallic sections that they strapped to her legs. She lifted one leg, and it fell with a thud.
"It's so heavy. How will I be able to walk?"
The captain smiled as they continued to strap on more metal.
"You are a strong woman, and the water will lighten your suit."
Soon Colette's arms, too, were covered in copper plating. The door opened. Sedar and young comrade Garay entered. Following a step behind them was Modo, in trousers and a white shirt that showed off his powerful shoulders. No mask, Colette noted. He was indeed handsome. He glanced around the room like a curious child. Then his eyes found hers.
"Mr. Walken," she said, giving her dark hair a flick so that it spread across the shoulders of her armour.
Murdo's cheeks turned a deeper shade of red.
"Aha," she thought. "He finds me attractive. The captain was kind enough to invite me here early, since it would be improper to dress in front of you masculine creatures."
"Oh, I see." He seemed to be at a loss for words.
The undersea suits are simply brilliant." "It's water armour," Monturiol said. "Sedar and I designed it. The plateau we will be walking across is 50 meters below the surface. The pressure is enough to squeeze the air out of your lungs."
She knocked on the copper plating of her own suit.
"This aquasuit will prevent that."
"Ah, good," Modo said.
"How long will we be gone?"
"No more than 3 hours," Monturiol said. "But you will be different people when you return."
"I wait with bated breath," Colette said, winking at Modo.
Sedar helped Modo into the India rubber suit and attached the copper plates, which made him look to Colette like an ancient warrior hero.
"Perhaps it is you who finds him attractive," she chided herself. "But was he older than her or younger?"
They both stepped into metal shoes that Girona strapped onto their feet. Finally, Sedar helped Comrade Garay into his aquasuit. "It is Comrade Garay's first underwater perambulation," he explained. A blush crossed Garay's freckled face. Colette grinned at him.
"I'm certain that Monsieur Garay is as happy as I am to have such elderly, veteran, sea walkers to guide us."
Garay smiled back until Sedar tightened a strap, making him grimace. Monturiol tapped the tank on the back of Colette's aquasuit.
"You'll be even happier to have the Emilia device. It will give you several hours of oxygen." "The name, is it Latin?" Modo asked. "I named it after my mother, who gave me life. My father discovered that manganese dioxide catalyzes the decomposition of potassium chlorate into potassium chloride gas and oxygen gas."
"There's chloride in this tank?" Colette asked.
"Yes."
Monturiol pointed to a tube.
"But it is expelled. You will be breathing only the oxygen. We have tested it 1,000 times without a problem. Speaking of oxygen, you must be a bit of an oddity, Mr. Walken."
Modo immediately touched his face in several places. Colette found that strange and took note in case she should, one day, have to use it against him.
"What do you mean by an oddity?" he asked. "Well, I keep exact records of the oxygen levels on the Ictinio. Since your arrival, more oxygen has been consumed than usual. Has your lung capacity ever been measured?"
No.
"Well, you do have a large chest. The amount of oxygen needed for your bloodstream may indicate that you are an aberration. The Emilia device will solve this puzzle. If you consume more oxygen than us, we'll know."
"I won't run out, will I?"
His voice quavered slightly.
"That would be inhospitable of me," Monturiol said with a half-smile. "What is our lovely destination?" Colette asked. "Soon, my friend. You'll enjoy the pleasure of strolling through Icaria."
The last item for them to put on was a spherical helmet with small, round glass windows at the front and sides. Sedar, who had dressed himself in his own aquasuit,
was holding two of the helmets.
"Before we clamp your aqua helms into place," Monturiol said, "I should point out that there is a light on each of our helmets. The electric cells will last 8 hours. These suits are heavy, but we will be much lighter in the water. Perhaps we shall even dance." And at that, she threw her head back and laughed. This was as giddy as Colette had ever seen her. She was clearly looking forward to the journey.
"Well, Mr. Walken," Colette said, "I hope you're a good dancer."
"I am looking forward to being the first Englishman to waltz upon the ocean floor."
Before Colette could comment, Serdar lowered the aqua helm over her head. She looked out the little window. Her breath was already fogging the glass. Her heartbeat doubled, and she sucked in air, but that only misted the glass more. She could hear the blood rushing through her ears. The captain motioned for them to move, and Colette struggled step by step into a smaller chamber, where the five of them stood close together. Girona closed the heavy door, which had a porthole, and turned a spoked wheel. Colette glanced at Modo. His eyes seemed to show the same fear and exhilaration she was feeling. There was a hissing. Then a cold sensation began moving from the soles of her feet to her knees and her hips. When she looked down, she saw water filling the chamber. Soon it was up to her arms and her neck. A tingle of panic rose in her stomach, and she thought of her father teaching her to swim. "Always be the master of your breathing." She made herself breathe extra slowly, counting each breath. By the time the water rose above her head, she was calm again. The window in her helmet cleared. With a muffled clunking sound, Serdar opened the door in front of them, and Monturiol gestured for Colette and Modo to follow her. The lights of the Actinio lit up the ocean floor. Colette's first step sank into the soft bottom, but a few inches down she hit something solid, and she soon got her footing. A bright orange starfish sat near her feet. Bulbous purple and red plants surrounded her, and others with spiky or cottony coverings. Orange mushroom-like plants waved back and forth. Grey fish darted out of their way. She didn't know her sea species very well. She followed Monturiol and Serdar, surprised at how light her suit felt, though it still took some effort to move. Modo was just behind her, and she gave him and Garay a friendly, leaden-handed wave. The ocean bed wasn't as flat as she had expected, and they seemed to be climbing. Something large floated in the distance, but her light didn't penetrate that far. What if it was a shark? An image of the sinking Vendetta flashed through her mind, and the fins cutting through the water. Her stomach lurched, but she continued to put one foot in front of the other. After 15 minutes of walking, they entered a grove of tall seaweed. Captain Monturiol stopped, knelt down, and appeared to pray. Serdar knelt beside her and was clumsily joined by Comrade Garay. Colette glanced behind her at Modo, who gave an almost imperceptible shrug. It wasn't until Colette had taken another step that she saw the gravestone. "Narcisse Monturiol I Estariol" was carved across it. The grave of the captain's father, the inventor of the submarine ship. There were five other graves as well, perhaps belonging to fallen comrades. Colette's father had been buried in Japan, in a grave she had visited only once. She felt tears well up, and then it seemed the most natural thing in the world to kneel and lower her head. When she opened her eyes, she was surprised to see Monturiol standing over her, holding out her hand. Colette took it and was lifted to her feet. Then Monturiol turned and motioned for them all to trudge on. Colette was cold, but moving through the water warmed her. She felt light-headed, happier than she had in a long time, and she wondered if the mix of gases in the Amelia device was somehow responsible. Then it occurred to her that she was actually exhilarated. She was walking on the amazing ocean floor. There was so much to see and to feel. Somewhere far above them the sun was shining, but only a glimmer of light reached these depths. Another large shape appeared above them. Colette watched in terror as it shot straight at Modo. He put up his hands, and at the last moment the shape veered around him. By its profile she realized it was a dolphin. It glanced back, smiling playfully. Monturiol had stopped, and through the window of her aqua helm Colette could see she was laughing.
Several bright white lights appeared ahead, surprising Colette. With each step, the lights grew larger and so bright, it became clear that no creature of the ocean could be the source. When they had trekked close enough for her to see what the light revealed, she gasped, astonished at the genius and the pure audacity of what stretched out before her.